And welcome to Backstage Pass, a spinoff of the Rock and Roll Survivors podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and I'll be talking with music writers, podcasters, photographers, promoters, groupies, and so many others who love rock and roll. So here's your Backstage Pass. Let's get started. Well, welcome back to the final of the three episodes that we've been talking about, Madeline Beccaro, and your amazing, incredible, I don't have enough words for it, book, In Your Mind, The Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono. And it's everything you've ever wanted to know about this extraordinary artist, her life, her music, her love with John Lennon. She is such a humanitarian. She is so inspiring to me on so many levels as an artist, as a person. But we were saying this on the last episode, I don't think you can disassociate Yoko Ono's passion, mind, approach to life from her childhood in Japan, her love of nature, which I really want you to speak to. I mean, that's integrated into all of her approach to life, weaving in numerology into her life, spirituality, Buddhism, some Christianity, and anything else that she has brought in to, I think, help motivate her through this life of trauma and her survival mode. But she's never taken a negative approach, as far as I can tell, and from your book. So I would love you to tell us about Yoko Ono's reverence for nature and how it plays into her life and her art. So welcome back, Madeline.
Thank you. I really appreciate this.
Of course.
So Yoko's strength really comes from her ability to connect with the delicate things in the world and invisible things. And she just comes from a whole other dimension, I think. And yeah, she consults. She's very spiritual, and she had psychics, astrologers, tarot readers, and the I Ching, and Egyptology, numerology, all that. And she had a directionalist. It was Takashi Yoshikawa, and he was the world's foremost specialist on Qi, which is the ancient Chinese divination system. And it teaches that life is determined by the three energies of earthly, heavenly, and human nature. So she really believed in that. And I have a lot of quotes from her, but this one is, I think it's adorable in a way, because it's probably very, very true. So she says, "Sometimes I put a bowl at the window in my kitchen. There I plant seeds of vegetables that I eat. They keep on growing. I watch them every day. The plants watch me too. They understand exactly what I'm thinking. So when I'm sad, the plants hang their heads too. And when my sadness lasts a long time, they turn yellow and fade. When I feel well, they do not fade, even if I don't give them water. Scholars all over the world show scientific evidence for such relationships between humans and plants. Many people talk to plants and trees. People who think this is absurd abuse their common sense. I think this is a prejudice produced by society, and I believe that those people are so stuck by this that they cannot react naturally."
Wow, I not only think that that's true, that's my personal opinion, but I think that that's so profound, because what she's saying, and this might sound obvious, but everything is connected, and therefore everything that she's doing artistically is connected. There is no separation. And so even as we've been talking about, even that silence isn't a separation. It's all integrated into this larger universe and world.
Right. Yeah. And she elevated my perception of dimensions and psychic connections and the subconscious, the connectivity of everything and everyone. And she was kind of like my connection to the outside world when I was a kid. I was 10 when I discovered her, you know. I was part of history, like watching John and Yoko as a kid in my room and the bed-ins, and feeling like I was there, you know, and just watching this unfold and feeling like they were speaking up for me. And I just loved their positivity and humor.
Well, for those that didn't hear our last series of interviews, I want to underscore what you just said, which is, you are an only child. I'm an only child. And if you are an only child, you understand that there is a loneliness that's very different than just when you don't have people around. And you were 10 years old, and you saw in a magazine Yoko Ono's bottom or bottoms. And you just thought it was adorable, and you thought she was adorable. And this was prior to getting together with John Lennon. And I loved this idea of you saying that she was once your imaginary friend during this time of loneliness. And then you actually got to meet her, and you've had this decades-long relationship with her. And so now she's your real friend, and that you always had a feeling she would be your real friend. And so, how speak to me about the connectivity there. I mean, that seems like it was all kind of meant to be as a 10-year-old finding her. And how did her artwork help you through that loneliness as an only child?
Well, she helped me tremendously. I mean, just having that connection and feeling like someone understood me and that I could understood her, Sandra, who was so isolated in her own genius in a way. I just saw the genius in her. And she taught me about the nature of humanity too. I mean, the essence of a person can't be captured on film, let's say. You know, because once they're on a spotlight, people act differently. So this is why we only see actors and actresses on a screen, even television, even on reality shows, I think. So she has a great quote. She says, "You have a molecule, the smallest substance in the world, and you don't understand how it moves. When you put a light on it, you change the movement, and you can never tell for sure how it really moves. And people are like that. You can attempt to film reality, but once you turn on the lights, people become self-conscious and their thought processes change. You never really can tell what the real person is like. Therefore, there's a part of life that can never be recorded or articulated. Language fails you because language simplifies reality. Logic fails you because logic is also a simplification. Logical processes can enjoy this intangible aspects of life."
I love that yet again she's bringing this idea of exposure and light, and that that's not necessarily always a positive, for lack of a better way of putting it, a negative and a positive, right? That the exposure sometimes makes it inauthentic, and you become an actor within this world of humanity and what you're doing for it. Whereas that quiet molecule is much more integrated into the flow of the universe and what's really happening behind the scenes.
You're very observant in that. That's great. I love that.
Well, tell more about her love of nature. I mean, one of the things I said this before, so forgive me for repeating myself, but it has just changed my mental paradigm when I look outside, that I have, the electrical, wires that are hanging. They look like a musical staff now to me. And every morning, as I have my coffee and I hear the birds on the near the trees, or if they fly onto the electrical cords, I always think of Yoko's work of, imagine, what is it? Imagine this musical staff and then hear the.
Oh, imagine, well, play this with the accompaniment of the birds singing at dawn.
That's right. I love that. And ever since I read your book and what Yoko's idea is when she was a child trying to, in one of her music lessons, take down the composition, the notes of the birds, and she realized these are not songs, they're communicating.
She just realized the difficulties of doing that because it was so complex. And she said, "There's something wrong with the way we make musical notation, notes on a staff." So she pretty much wrote out the words and sold the bird sounds that way.
I love it. Talk more about her love of nature.
Well, she's talking about how we're distracted so much, that we design rituals to distract us from essential and natural things that we're missing in our lives. And despite we're devising these for our survival, these rituals are really unhealthy and they take time away from our happiness. But I love this quote from her. She says, "Breast fetish, among other sexual fetishes in this male society, is of course the result of being nursed with a milk bottle when the real need was to be nurse-fed by mother. Most of the things in society are things we don't really need for our existence." And then she's talking about how we are shaped in society. Even before we are born, we're appropriately distorted by parental training, but our state at the time of birth is the closest to nature. However, the baby gets milk only at the times the mother has fixed. Although he wants to drink more, mother determines a certain quantity. So she forces the rhythm of society upon him, and finally he loses his natural rhythm. He has to accept things like nutrition of 2,400 calories a day, or he has to wear a necktie, and all this ties him up.
Oh, wow. I love that. And I'm all of these connections with the way she thinks. I just love her mind so much. And again, I love the way you've woven her mind into your book. But when she talks about a baby and its moment of birth is the purest to nature it will ever be. Well, what does a baby do when it first comes into this earth? It screams.
Yes.
And to all of us who are there, that means it's a healthy child. That
right.
scream means you're alive.
And that's my beginning of the chapter about her music, Queen of the Scream. I wrote, we are all born screaming. Like, duh.
Exactly. And that is something to be embraced and not quieted, which is, I think, another incredible nod to Yoko Ono and her brilliant way of thinking, that she understood that.
Right.
So please continue.
And I think, you know, she relates nature in a way to the act of giving, because she always says it's our responsibility to give of our wealth, or no matter how poor we are, we should give. And she says, you know, we're responsible to do that. And I think the laws of nature in economic and political situations, high water falls low. And if our cup is full, it's going to flow. It's natural for us to give, because if we have a lot. If we don't give, that's going against the laws of nature. And in order to go against, you have to use tremendous energy, unnecessary energy, to keep it like that, in order to keep that money. That would be very bad for us. And we're not going to do that. If we have more than we need money-wise, we'd rather let the money flow out naturally. It's just wisdom. And if people don't have that wisdom, you're using that unnecessary energy. It's going to get back at you one way or another. You're going to get cancer or something, and it just isn't worth it.
And it's the letting go again. You know, she could have turned out to be an incredibly bitter person. She had a really painful childhood, could have been justified that she went inward and bitter. She was treated horribly by the fans of the Beatles. She lost the love of her life through a murder. And yet she continues this embrace of the potential of what could be and what continues, and that life doesn't stop. The flow is there. And if you try and stop it, it becomes stagnant and stale and putrid.
Right. Yeah, and she's always doing her best to help others. And, you know, people ask her and write letters to her for help all the time, whether it's John's fans who felt devastated by losing him. She would always, you know, write back and try to kind of help them work it out. I mean, why would you hate this person? I don't understand.
I don't understand it either. So as we round out the series of interviews, is there anything else you'd like to talk about with her love of nature and how you think it's integrated with her art and her music and her spirit and her humanitarian perspective?
Well, she really believes, she says, our life consists of the spiritual world, the mind world, and that's where we live. So if we want things to change at all, that's where we have to change, not with money and buildings. And, you know, she's just always trying to give her wisdom, help people, enlighten us to our inner powers. That's all it really is. And help us to heal and be together. And she has visions of the future that are beautiful and peaceful. And I was interviewed by a psychic who was an AM radio show in Florida. And her name is Kathy Nadal. And she was very into all of this. And there are, just like people who remember being reincarnated in past lives, they also have future projections. And a lot of them, just like Yoko, see a reduced population, but they see this utopia that Yoko and John were always speaking of.
Well, that is incredibly encouraging, because if Yoko is right, and I believe she's right, then I think this is a wonderful future for us. And I think we can thank her and John for helping pave the way along the way.
Big time.
You know, it's interesting because, and I want you to tell everybody again where to get your book, but one of the things, and I actually get emotional when I talk about this with your book, is that you've really changed my perspective through your writing and through Yoko Ono's, because, you know, and I don't mean to minimize this, but in our Western fast-paced world, the idea of being in your mind is very much seen as a, like, get out of the chatter in your mind, you know, clear your head. And, you know, you're getting stuck in your head like that. It's seen as a negative, you know, get out, go out into nature. I find, you know, get clear your head. But we don't know how to use our mind in this society, I think, to in a way that she does, where it's a way of cleaning the slate of what's going on out there and tapping into something through this larger universe and spiritual realm through her mind. And I think the way she's breaking ground there as well, that's very pioneering. And that's what's really, I've loved about, I mean, I've known her work for so long, but through your writing, I really am understanding that that's not a negative to be in your mind, as long as you know how to use your mind to better yourself, to support yourself, to share with the world, and to keep giving. And I think that's probably in the end her greatest gift to us, this huge lesson on so many levels.
Definitely. I mean, she's way ahead of her time, you know, and I don't think people really were ready for it, but I think they are now. They're really enjoying the exhibitions, and it's just her time, I think.
I think it's her time too, and I love this because I'm so, my role, if nothing else in this world, is to help empower other women. And I love the fact, for example, I've done other podcasts about the all-female band Fanny, and people have long criticized and said, well, it wasn't their time, or they were a novelty. And it's like, I always say, you know what? It's their time now. People can rediscover something and see it in a whole new light. And boy, if your book, in your mind, The Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono, does not do that for people and turn everyone, fan, hater, on the fence around, I don't know what will. So I encourage everybody to get a copy of your book, to give it out as gifts. You are self-published. So Madeline Beccaro, tell us where everybody can get your masterpiece.
So the best place is conceptualbooks.com. I have a hardcover and softcover. There's an option of having it signed by me. And then it's also on Amazon for those overseas who get free shipping. And it's at bookbaby.conceptualbooks.com, another online place. It's at some major book retailers if you Google it. And it's in some independent bookstores, and you can always ask for it by name and have your local store order it for you.
And for those who haven't seen it, please check it out. I will be posting images. It's an extraordinary cover. Please tell us who the artist is. I want to promote her work as well.
Sure. Her name is Kat McInnes, and her website is katmcinnes.com. She's from Australia. She's a wonderful, whimsical artist.
Well, before we say goodbye for now, you, on Backstage Pass, have an open invitation. So you just let me know. You can come back anytime. I'm thinking we should call this Backstage Pass for Yoko Ono. That may just be the name. But I also really want to thank your fans, your listeners, Yoko Ono's fans, and especially Cindy Lee. Thank you so much for demanding this. And I use your word when I say that. And to sign off on this episode, I'm going to quote her one more time. So Cindy Lee said, "Thank you, Madeline, for sharing this brilliant masterpiece about such an incredible woman." Until then.